Davy Rothbart has turned an obsession with found items and a gift for storytelling into a successful career. And now he's turned his tendency to fall in love with the wrong woman for the wrong reasons into a fascinating book. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Davy Rothbart first became well-known for sharing notes he discovered in Found magazine. He's also a writer of fiction and nonfiction, a filmmaker, a regular contributor to This American Life, the subject of a documentary, and a nice guy who is unlucky in love. His latest book is a collection of essays about his romantic misadventures called My Heart is an Idiot. I'll talk with him. Join our conversation after the news. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe. Davy Rothbart's journey from professional ticket scalper to magazine publisher, author, journalist, and filmmaker is an interesting one. His latest book is not about that journey. It's about the many romantic misadventures he has had along the way. It's called My Heart is an Idiot, and he'll be reading at Prairie Lights Bookstore in Iowa City tonight at 7 o'clock. He's here in the studio, in the nick of time, with me this morning. Good morning, Davy.
Good morning. It's good to be here.
Thank you so much for coming in today.
Absolutely. It's fun to join you guys.
Well, and I've watched your career over the years from Found magazine, where you were publishing and still are publishing notes, scraps of paper, interesting things that you have found and that many other people have found and sent to you. You've also done a number of other things over the years, writing fiction. You've been a regular contributor on This American Life. You've been dabbling, not more than dabbling, I would say, in filmmaking. What made you want to write a nonfiction book about your romantic experiences?
You know, it's funny because we've been publishing in Found magazine other people's most private thoughts for the last 10 years. Because, you know, the notes in Found magazine are really raw, really personal. These are notes that were not intended to be read by anyone besides the person they were writing to. And so people reveal themselves in these really unselfconscious, really raw and intimate ways. And so it felt only fair to share my own stories with people now.
Those notes are anonymous.
True. That's an important distinction.
And this is anything but anonymous.
I just started writing a couple personal essays. There's a magazine I really like called The Believer, and they had asked me to write some more personal pieces, and I really enjoyed them. Even probing into painful or humiliating experiences from earlier in my life, I found that what Albert Brooks, the director, said is true: tragedy plus time equals comedy. So even something that might have seemed really painful or difficult at the time, you know, looking back at something that happened a few years ago, you can see it for the humorous situation there truly was.
There are funny stories in your book, but it's also it is heartbreaking and it's difficult to read. Was it difficult to write?
Yes. At times it was hard to go back and look at, you know, these are, you know, when you enter into some relationship or some romantic entanglement, you're always hoping for the best. And when things don't go the way you plan them to go, then, you know, there's always some heartbreak there. And so looking back at them, you know, sometimes I'd feel sad. I felt regretful about stupid things I've done that, you know, I wish I could take back. And yet ultimately, I feel like I gained some perspective on my own life, my own patterns of you know, approaching relationships. And so what was really interesting and what's been interesting is now that my brother Peter and I are doing the 79-city tour, celebrating Found Magazine's 10th anniversary, the book My Heart is an Idiot, and also my brother has a new album out. And I've gotten to see some of the characters from the book. I say characters, they're real people. And getting a chance to hang out with them and talk about these experiences with them has been really interesting.
And this is not the first time your romantic misadventures have been explored. There was a documentary that came out, is it 2 years ago now?
Yes.
Also called My Heart is an Idiot, where someone followed you around with a camera as you you tried to get a relationship off the ground and also sought romantic advice from many other people. And when I saw the trailer for that, and unfortunately I haven't had a chance to actually see the movie, but I saw the trailer for that and I thought, Wow, that's not a good way to get a romance off the ground.
Looking for advice.
Right, and having a camera follow you around all the time.
True, true. Well, yeah, and that's an interesting part of that documentary is what role does a camera play in, you know, when you are documenting your own life or you know, does that interfere with, you know, some kind of deep dialogue you can have with somebody that you're trying to be with? I find that... What's been special is now that I have opened myself up so much, you know, people come to our events and my brother and I do this kind of energetic reading music performance, like the one we're doing tonight at Prairie Lights Books. And people will come up to me and they'll say, "Hey, I read your book," and they'll give me kind of this sly smile and this weird, and I'm like, "Wow, you know me really well. Don't you know a lot about me, don't you?" And they're like, "Yeah, I kind of do." But what's cool, Charity, is that now that people are doing that, now that people have read the book, they feel really comfortable sharing some deep and personal things with me. And I've always been a person who's not that much for small talk. You know, I like to dig in. So it's been really kind of magical the last couple of months traveling around the country and having people share some pretty personal stories with me and getting to know some people in some deep and meaningful ways.
One of the things that I found to be interesting about the book is that And I know you've written fiction in the past and fiction inspired by real life. With this nonfiction book, there were stories in here that I think that had they been fiction, I would have said, that's not really believable.
That's too far-fetched.
I don't buy that.
Yeah, yeah.
So did writing nonfiction give you the ability to lay it all out there in a way that you almost couldn't in fiction?
I think so. You know, I kind of welcome adventure into my
Clearly.
Life. And so sometimes I, my friend, I heard him say about me, that I'm someone who never is afraid to complicate my life. And that may be true too, but I think that, I think that there's some pretty crazy stories in the book, but a lot of them, besides just the ones about love and relationship, a lot of the ones that are my favorites are kind of about some of the interesting people I've met over the last 10 years as I've been traveling around the country so much. Interesting strangers who I've met just through serendipity who have played sort of an important or meaningful role in my life. There's a guy, I was on my way to the Grand Canyon, and I saw this guy hitchhiking, this old guy, 75 years old. I picked him up, and he told me a story. He was from Boston. He worked his whole life in a factory, he told me, and his lifelong dream was to go to the Grand Canyon. And he told me that a few weeks before, he had been at work, and the guys he worked with, they were like, "You know what, man? Shut up. You're always talking about the Grand Canyon. You're never going to go there. It's depressing to hear you talk about it." And so he said, "I quit." You know, he turned in his tools, walked out, and a few weeks later, he was on a bus headed west. He'd gotten as far as Texas and been hitchhiking the rest of the way. So here's a guy whose lifelong dream is to go to the Grand Canyon. I'm lucky enough to pick him up for his last 2 hours and, like, deliver him to the edge of the canyon, be there to witness this moment. He like thrusts his fists in the air and you know, it's just so excited. And you know, we ended up hiking down to the canyon and camped out together that weekend. And that's a story called How I Got These Boots in the new book. And, you know, but for me, it's people like that guy, John Malloy, who have, you know, been meaningful to me and inspirational in a way.
You call that serendipity, but clearly you make choices in your life that that put you in situations where you can have that kind of serendipity.
I think
lot of us riding in our minivan with the two kids in the back are not going to stop and pick up a hitchhiker along the highway. I get the impression you pick up pretty much every hitchhiker you see.
I don't want to overstate it. I don't think you have to be reckless in order to have those opportunities to engage with strangers. I pick up 1 in 20 hitchhikers I see, but that's still, you see a lot of hitchhikers, you know, you don't believe it seems like more. but there's times when I've ran out of gas, and look, I probably could have called AAA and waited an hour and a half for some lonely country road, but I hitchhiked myself and I had a flat tire and someone helped me. And one of the stories in the book, there's a story called Ain't That America, the last story in the book, about this family, this former Marine and his family who picked me up when I had run out of gas out in Death Valley, California. And so, I mean, I think, you know, you want to be safe, but I think if the opportunity presents itself, usually for me, it's just, I'm on a Greyhound bus and it's the person sitting next to me on the bus. I'm at the bar and there's some guy sitting next to me. Why not start up a conversation with that person and see where it leads?
Well, and I don't know if we have time to dig into this story deeply. You've given us a couple of previews of the kinds of stories that you tell in the book, but Let's talk about Valentine's Day in Buffalo, New York, so people can get an idea of some of the kinds of stories. And this one, honestly, in many ways, the most far-fetched, although clearly a real experience of yours. But you're on your way to Buffalo, New York. Yeah. Why are you headed that
direction? It's Valentine's Day. I've just had a couple dates with this girl from my hometown, this girl named Lauryn Hill. Not the singer Lauryn Hill, but a girl who went to my high school named Lauryn Hill. And I went out to try to surprise her on Valentine's Day. I took the bus from Ann Arbor, Michigan, our hometown, to Buffalo, thinking that it would be some grand romantic gesture. And of course, you know, as I show up in town, I start to realize that maybe this is not the best idea in the world.
And you also make a friend along the way.
There's a guy on the bus who claims to be turning 110 years old at midnight. And I'll tell you something. I believed him. He was an old guy. But he was pretty sprightly, and he had his own kind of rendezvous he was hoping to make with his great-granddaughter. And me and him, this guy Vernon, we ended up kind of on an adventure together, along with another friend of mine, Chris Henderson, who's a car thief of sorts. And
so who's very kindly offered you a ride, although it's in a stolen vehicle.
It's in a stolen car. We were roaming around Buffalo. It seemed like one adventure turned into another. And, you know, at the end of the night, I just knew I wanted to go to this bar where Lauryn Hill worked and try to declare my love for her. But along the way, I did meet a pretty incredible cast of characters. And I talk about in the story how buoyant I feel going into this bar with this 110-year-old guy as my wingman, you know. And in a weird way, I think somehow I felt like the more people I collected, the more... The greater gift my appearance could be to Lauryn, or the less likely she would be to reject.
By the time you walked into the bar for the second time, you'd gone in to say hello, and she's like, "I'm too busy. Come back later," which is not a good sign. But you come back later, and you've got Vernon.
Yes.
And you've got Chris, the guy who's been driving you around.
Yes.
And his brother, who's been very angry.
Right.
You've got Vernon's great-granddaughter.
Yes.
Vernon's great-granddaughter's daughter's ex-husband.
Right.
And his pregnant girlfriend.
Yes.
And you have an entire family of people who run a Chinese restaurant where Vernon's great-granddaughter's daughter's ex-husband worked as a dishwasher.
That's amazing. I can't believe you broke it down so elegantly and perfectly. Yes, we were rolling together to this bar, and things went well. Things went well. And you know what's funny, Charity? I saw Lauryn Hill a week ago or 2 weeks ago in Denver on this tour. And so this experience was like 10 or 12 years ago, but it's just really exciting that those people, when they come into your life, they stay in your life. And these stories, although they're finished in the book, they always continue.
I'm talking with Davey Rothbart. He is the editor and publisher of Found Magazine. He's also an author of a number of books and a filmmaker. His latest book is called My Heart is an Idiot, Essays about his romantic misadventures. He'll be reading tonight at 7 o'clock at Prairie Lights Bookstore in Iowa City. We'll continue this conversation in a moment, and you're welcome to join us. Give us a call at 866-780-9100. Tweet us at IPR Talk or send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. My guest today is Davey Rothbart. You may know him from hearing him on This American Life various times over the years. You may know him from Found Magazine. You may know him from the documentary about him, My Heart is an Idiot. He also has a new book that he has just published. It's nonfiction essays about his romantic adventures. It's called My Heart is an Idiot. And he's in Iowa City today. He'll be reading at Prairie Lights Bookstore tonight at 7 o'clock. You can also find out more about the book on the website, myheartisanidiotbook.com. And one of the things that I learned about you from reading this book, Davey, is that you fall in love very quickly. It strikes me
guilty as charged,
right? And it's a pattern that you play out over and over again. You get your heart broken a lot. As you went through and you wrote these stories, were you trying to look for patterns like that? Were you trying to think, how do I get myself into these situations?
They emerged I think it's easy when you meet someone for the first time or just glimpse someone across a room or across Gabe's bar, for example. You know, it'd be easy to, have that that feeling where you just, you know, this is my soulmate. You know, you feel your heart swell. You just get completely absorbed with the person. And I think to idealize who they are, because you don't, kind of like these found notes, you know, you find a found scrap of paper on the ground, some love letter, some to-do list, and it's a fragment of a story. It's up to you to piece together who this person is, what the rest of the story is. I think it's the same way with falling in love. You know, it's easy to, that's why I think over the phone or, you know, over internet dating, you know, I think people can really get wound up because, you know, you just have the little fragments. You think of who that you want. You complete that person as you would want them to be. And of course, it's always difficult. You know, when you actually get to know someone better, you see their failings, they see yours, and things don't always work out the way you would dream they would. But sometimes they work out in some other interesting or important way.
Well, you're generalizing in a way. I'm not sure we all can find it easy to do that. This is
like a, you know, like how I replace me,
right.
I, me
right.
with oh everybody. It's so
we're
universal.
All like that. But you know, it's interesting. I think that and maybe this is part of your work with Found Magazine. Maybe that's why that works so well for you. But you do seem to create a world around a person upon meeting them. And you're clearly someone who's very open to getting to know people. You want to know about them. You want to hear their stories. But you also, there's a one of the essays in the book I found fascinating, and now I can't think of the name of the
Shade.
Essay. Yes, Shade. How did you know? But you write about falling in love with a character in the movie Gas, Food, and Lodging when you were 17 years old, and her name was Shade. And you're always looking for this girl in real life. You know that it's not the actress, but you have this idea that this girl is out there somewhere, and you fall in love with girl after girl after girl, wanting her to be like this character in a movie. And I find that to be almost an interesting disconnect between the Davy Rothbart who is going out and seeking people's stories. And here you are, you're bringing a lot of baggage into this relationship and a lot of expectations and a lot of ideals.
Yeah, no, that's very acute. And I think that's true. Yeah, I mean, I think both can exist at the same time. I think you can have this sort of one idealized figure in your life, whether it was for me a character in a movie or whether it was some past girlfriend, I think, for some people. And I think there can be a tendency. Do you like, again, how I'm not saying it's – I'm talking about myself. I'm talking about everybody. But I think there could be a tendency for people to – and for me especially to you know, to try to, you know, take a new person that comes into your life and try to somehow fit them into the peg hole that, you know, this other perfection, you know, idealized relationship occurred in. But at the same time, yes, I am very curious about people. I love hearing their stories. I love getting to know the specific minutiae of a new person's life. And that's part of the joy of falling in love with somebody and getting to know a new person is learning about their family, learning about their favorite movies, music, their saddest moments that they've been through, their happiest times, you know. So that's a different kind of love. I think at the end of the book, that story, Ain't That America, is about this British girl named Anna, who is a writer and who I also got to run into on this trip and is still a good friend of mine. And I feel like that there's maybe, hopefully, some evolution in the book between this sort of romanticized versions of, you know, trying to find girls like Shade, this movie character, and meeting a real person like Anna, who is special in her own right and for her own reasons.
You also seem to be very attracted to women who have a lot of baggage themselves. You and maybe this is part of this idealized romantic tendency
yeah.
of yours to want to, I don't know.
Just to interrupt you, Charity. I think that for me, that when you meet a girl who has some sadness in their life, I think you feel like they have some more deeply textured understanding of the world. And I can't say, I've had a pretty blessed life. I haven't had to deal with a lot of the struggles and heartaches that, you know, that many of my friends have. But I do think I'm a deeply feeling person. And I think that when I see, I think what's so intoxicating about someone's sadness is maybe the urge to alleviate it and to feel like you can be the person to bring them comfort and happiness. And also, I think just the sense that they could understand the most deepest, darkest, troubled parts of yourself because they've been through some tough times themselves.
There's a wonderful moment in the story that you call Shade, where you have gone to Arizona to meet a girl that you fall in love with over the phone. The two of you are going to take a road trip together, and you very quickly realize that this girl is not the girl that you had fantasized about.
Right.
you suddenly discover, wait a minute, I'm not in love with this girl that I've been talking to on the phone for the last 6 weeks. But you do see a waitress at a Subway restaurant that you find that you find to be extremely appealing. And after abruptly breaking it off with the young woman named Sarah and leaving her back at her home, you drive back to the Subway restaurant where you saw this other girl and you left her a note. And I thought that was such a beautiful moment because there's Davy Rothbard who finds notes and you're creating the kind of note that you would publish in your own magazine.
That is too true. Oh, man. You know, I'm glad you mentioned that moment because I'm not trying to big up myself, but there's some parts of the book that I still I'm like, you know, conflicted about. I probably could have improved that story, but that was my favorite moment in the book that you just named because I was at the peak of my dementedness in a way because I think I say that in the story because I had just one sort of crazed obsession with some girl had just dissolved. When I realized in the light of day that it was not everything I'd sort of been building it up to be. And then immediately I just attached all those same feelings to the first person across my path, this girl at a Subway, just how random, but just, oh, she's not, this girl's really not the one. Wait, she's the one.
Right.
And I left her this insane note that somebody very easily and possibly could have found and sent into Found Magazine.
Right, although you made it very clear who you were, so it wouldn't have been one of those lovely anonymous notes.
I would have, it would have been shocking if I had received that in the mail. I did once get a found note that shocked me. I opened it up, and it was my own handwriting.
Oh, you're kidding.
It was a napkin. It was just a napkin I'd written some. We did a live This American Life event in Boston a few years ago, and I was opening for David Sedaris. It was one of the bigger venues I'd ever done a reading in, and I was kind of nervous. So some of the stuff I normally just say because it's part of my spiel, I guess. I wrote them down on this napkin, thinking just so I wouldn't forget. And then that must have like floated off the stage into the crowd. Somebody said it kind of as a joke. They knew, I think, that I had written it, but they
right.
still. It was funny to see it. But anyways, yeah. Shay's a good story. What did you think about? We were talking about the book My Heart Is an Idiot. I'm here with Charity Nebbe, the host of Iowa
now?
Public Radio. Talk of Iowa. And tell me, Charity, what do you think about that story in New York, New York? Because I was talking about that with our friend Dean Bacopoulos last night. We did an event at Grinnell. You know which one that is?
Right.
Did you read that one?
Right. That was you went to New York on 9/11. Just coincidentally, you were.
Well, I was going there to do some reporting on public radio. I mean, right in the aftermath of September 11th. And for me, that one and Canada or Bust, those are two of my favorites.
Yeah, no, they're both great stories.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to flip the script on you. Hakeem, there's a story, Canada or Bust, and I guess maybe I do pick up more hitchhikers than I realize. He's this kid I saw selling bootleg.
But, and you didn't even pick up him as a hitchhiker. You
That's
arranged
true.
To pick him up as a hitchhiker. You met him briefly while intoxicated on the street outside a fancy club in L.A. after getting dumped by a girl and arranged to meet him the next day so he could hitchhike with you.
You're absolutely
right.
These are
the right. kind of plans you make.
he needed to get north. He wanted to move to Canada and be a DJ, this kid Hakeem. And I was going to San Francisco the next day. Why not pick him up and give him a ride at least that far along the path? Well, we hit it off, and he was just this awesome, awesome kid. And now, I haven't seen him in a few years, but in Brooklyn at our show a couple of weeks ago, he surprised me. I read different stories every night. I don't know which ones I'm going to read tonight at Prairie Lights, but I'll pick something good. But in Brooklyn, I happened to read for one of the first times on the trip that story, Canada or Bus. And I could kind of see from the stage, is that kid looks like Hakeem? It's been a few years. I don't know, out in the crowd. And it was him. And his mom was there too, which was crazy because I wrote some unflattering things about her in the story. I mean, things that he had told me about her
right.
that were true and that afterwards she told me she had no problem with because she was going through a rough time and had done some things she wasn't proud of. But it was so awesome to get to hang out with him again too. So
well, and you must have an extraordinary ability to not you write about how it's easy to collect people now in this day and age because you go on a Greyhound bus ride and you wind up with six more Facebook friends and, you know, phone numbers and all of these ways that you can keep in touch with people.
Right.
But you also must have an extremely good ability to remember faces.
It's a curse at times. Identify
people because tell us how you saw Hakeem again after you had given him a ride.
Right.
Basically overnight, he was asleep through most of the ride from L.A. to San Francisco.
Yeah.
And then you see him again years later.
Yeah. Well, we that week after I brought him up to San Francisco, we ended up hanging out a few times. So I got to spend some more time with him that week. And then, you know, because he wanted to move to Canada, his dream was of finding community, finding like a racially tolerant place where, you know, with lax marijuana laws, you know, and this Canada of his dream. He had never been there, but he just heard it was cool.
Right. He thought being a DJ in Vancouver was the pinnacle for him.
Exactly. And so years later, I was in Hawaii, Honolulu, and I just stumbling down the beach, the end of some, you know, kind of lonely, depressed night. And I see this party on the beach and I'm kind of looking at the DJ and it's Hakeem. And it was really a crazy feeling because I just knew right away once I saw him that it was him. And he was so blasé about that coincidence. I mean, it was three years later on, you know, the other side of the planet. And I was like, what are you doing here? He was like, I'm DJing. Do you want to go get a hamburger or something, you know? So I don't know. It's fun. It's cool. It's interesting when people come back into your life and stay in your life. Oh, but what I was going to say about being cursed. Are we short on time?
You're good. Okay.
I pretty much remember every person's name that I meet. But then the problem is, that's kind of weird, and that freaks people out because, like, a year later, I'll be at some party and I'll be like, Darren, what's up, man? And he's like, who are you? And I'm like, well, we talked for like 20 minutes at that taco place like 8 months ago. He's like, I don't remember. And so people think I'm a little weird sometimes.
I'm not sure you discourage that.
Yeah. Fair enough. I remember Dennis's name, but I was in kind of a rush when I came in, so I don't remember the name of some of your crew member, Allison.
Yep. Yeah. That somehow I lost my train of thought there, Davey. I don't know how you did that
to me.
You must do that to a lot of people.
let me give the website address then for the book, because I'll tell you, we have some fun stuff on there. It's myheartisanidiotbook.com. And we have on there, we have the first story from the book, Bigger and Deafer. It's about my mom.
And I was going to ask you about that, because this is a book mostly.
Yes.
About your romantic relationships.
Yep.
The very first essay in the book is about your mom.
Yeah.
Why did you start there?
You know, I don't know why we put it as the first essay in the book. I kind of like it. It was maybe one of the first ones that I wrote. And so, I don't know, that's not really a reason to make it the first in the book. But what's funny is that the editor I worked with on the book is a guy named Sean McDonald. Super awesome guy. He's worked with some of my favorite authors, George Saunders, Juno Diaz, and stuff like that. He's a legend. And so, but the thing is, as I was writing this book over the course of years, I was emailing him the pieces, and he was just like, he would just say, good job, keep going. No feedback. He didn't really want to dig into the pieces until I was done. So I started BCCing my mom every time I would email him the stories. And it might sound weird because some of the stories are so raw and personal and pretty, you know, intense. But for me, she would always write back with, you know, just really encouragement. I love this piece. She would give me a couple ideas, some criticism. The end of that Canada bus was totally different. On her suggestion, I totally changed how I ended the story. But my mom was really cool. And that story, I did some This American Life pieces with my mom because she's deaf.
Mm-hmm.
And we went to Brazil to visit this miracle healer, this guy named John of God, to see if we could get her hearing back. You know, and there's people there from all over the world, people with cancer, with AIDS, people in wheelchairs. We were there for a month. So that was a really intense trip. And I'd done some other stories with my mom. And this magazine asked me to write a piece about what it was like to grow up with a deaf mom. And I think they wanted something a little sentimental, like with the Tone American Life pieces. So I decided to take it in the opposite direction. And I wrote about what it was like to take advantage of my mom's deafness. Me and my brothers, as kids.
To an extreme degree.
Torment her. But it's done with affection, and I think some people have read the story and felt like it was pretty cruel, but my mom laughs at it when she hears about it. She was at our event in Seattle. She happened to be out there that weekend. So I read that piece, and she got up afterwards and talked about the tricks we'd play on her and the tricks she'd play on us.
And in the story, you write about how you had to translate telephone calls for her for many years.
Yeah, and that, you know, what was so interesting? Okay, so that night in Seattle, she got up on the stage And she was breaking down. You know, we would translate these phone calls for her because she was deaf. She had no operator-assisted phone. We had to tell her what the people on the other end of the line were saying, whether it was she was ordering a pizza or talking to her friend. And so in the story, I talk about the ways that I would change the script when, like, my principal would call because I had gotten in trouble at school. And I would tell her something a little different than what they were actually saying, a lot different. Well, she told me, and there was a trick we play on her. We'd bring the doorbell. There was, like, a second doorbell in the middle of the house. Ring that because a dog would then drag her, you know, our trained guide dog would drag her by the sleeve to the front door. She said she told us, not to give away everything about the story, but she told us she knew about some of the tricks we were playing on her, but she talked about those phone calls. What I didn't realize was that when people would call her, she's a meditation teacher, Barbara Brodsky, and a personal counselor. People would call her with going through really difficult things in their life. And I would be 6, 7, 8 years old translating what they were saying to her. And she said that she reminded me in front of this crowd, I did not remember this. She said that sometimes I would give those people advice.
Oh, funny.
And, yeah, and that I wasn't purely translating. I would step in and offer my own advice.
I'm talking with Davey Rothbart. He is the editor and publisher of Found Magazine. He's also the author most recently of a book called My Heart is an Idiot. It's a collection of essays. He'll be reading at Prairie Lights Bookstore in Iowa City tonight at 7 o'clock. We'll be back after a break, and you're welcome to join the conversation at 866-780-9100. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. I'm here today with Davey Rothbart, who is the editor and publisher of Found Magazine. He's also an author, a filmmaker, a regular contributor to This American Life. And his latest book is called My Heart is an Idiot. He'll be reading at Prairie Lights Bookstore in Iowa City tonight at 7 o'clock. You can also find out more about the book at the website, myheartisanidiotbook.com. And let's talk a little bit about Found Magazine as well. This is the 10th anniversary of Found. And for people who have never seen the magazine, give us a little bit of a description of what this is.
Sure. Found Magazine, it's just a collection of notes, letters, you know, anything that people have found. You're walking down the street, you see some crumpled up piece of paper and pick it up. Maybe it turns out to be a love letter or a to-do list or a journal entry. If people find stuff, they send it to me from all over the country and really all around the world. And I just slap it together into Found Magazine once a year, these found books and also this Found Magazine website. foundmagazine.com. Every day we put our new favorite find up there, our favorite that we received the day before. I have a few examples spread out in front of me.
Sure. And you started out with the collection that you had put together, you and some of your friends.
Yeah.
But now how many contributions are you getting?
Sure. We get about 10 or 20 finds a day mailed into us, and then 10 or 20 scanned and emailed in. And all the finds that are mailed in actually go to my folks' house in Ann Arbor. I've bounced around a bit, but you know their address is pretty steady. They lived there since before I was born. So I figured that was like a good like headquarters address. But my mom and my dad, too, they'll open up some of the interesting-looking envelopes that come in. And it's just fun to see the postmarks, and it's fun to see, you know, what this project. It's really a community art project in the best sense, I think. Just, you know, there could be no Found Magazine if you didn't have thousands of people finding stuff and sending it in from all over.
You know, since Found Magazine came into being, I mean, it was really, to my knowledge at least, the first thing of this kind that came about. Since then, you know, there are a bunch of different websites where, like, is it passiveaggressivenotes.com or, you know, different places where people post things that they've seen written or notes that they've found.
Crowdsourced stuff.
Right. Like, so as these things have popped up and become popular, obviously kind of playing on the same kind of thing that has made Found such a phenomenon. Has that changed the kinds of notes that you want and that you publish?
I think not especially. I mean, yeah, there's these specialized sites, a passive aggressive note or a, you know, there's a guy, I think in St. Louis, who collects grocery lists especially. And that would still come under our umbrella, you know. But I think it's just cool to see new projects pop up. You know, there's a guy in D.C., Frank Warren. He used to come to our Found events. And then he told me one time he had this idea about starting a project with anonymous postcards that people would send them, you know, sharing a secret, some confession on an illustrated postcard. I was like, "Dad, that sounds awesome." Now it's huge. Post Secret, it's like the biggest website on the planet, or the biggest blog, I think, on the planet. And Frank is like the awesomest guy, and he's very generous about giving us credit as being Found Magazine being his inspiration, which he doesn't have to do, but that's nice of him. And I just feel, Frank says the same thing, that you know, there's dozens more of these kinds of projects yet to be invented, and like each one is kind of wonderful in its own right. So I'm excited anytime I hear about a new take on this kind of thing.
There's a moment in your book that I loved. It also made me frightened as an interviewer. But when you write about one of your previous book tours.
Oh, yeah.
And you were doing a lot of early morning TV shows.
Right.
And you often had been up all night, driving all night to get to your next destination. And one morning, you got to your destination at about 4 o'clock in the morning and went to sleep in the parking lot of the TV station.
Yes, as normal.
Right. The security guard comes out and checks on you. And you get, of course, you make friends with him.
Yeah.
And
Pico.
get to talking with him. And tell us what happened next.
Well, he told me that he had some interesting finds himself. He'd been looking through a stack. The station was moving soon to larger digs, and he'd been sifting through, you know, trying to find old calculators or anything of value. And he'd found a bunch of racy notes from the morning show's old dour anchorman to a young camera woman. And so we actually went back out to the dumpsters, and we kind of mucked about until we found, like, the stack of pages. And this guy, Pico, he was like, you should read some of these on the show. Because
and he was about to lose his job.
Yeah, he was going
to
lose his job.
So he didn't have a lot to lose.
He had nothing that much at stake. I felt conflicted because, you know, the publicist, you know, on each of these shows, I would read some of my favorite found notes, like we'll do tonight, Prairie Lights. And so I felt conflicted because the publicists for these books, you know, they work really hard to get you on these morning TV shows because it does make a difference. People see these things and they want to have you, you know, they want to check out the book. So I didn't want to ruin any of those relationships by reading this anchorman's, like, really, you know, pretty racy and pretty inappropriate notes he'd been writing to a woman that worked on the staff. But at the same time, it seemed to me, and this security guard told me, that everybody that worked at the station was kind of gunning for this guy. He was not a cool dude. He had it coming. I'll put it that way. So I did read a couple of his notes. In fact, just to give you a sense of what they said, I think I read this piece on This American Life a couple of years ago, and my boss, Ira Glass, he had to actually bleep out some of the most important words of the story, which were in this guy's note to this young camerawoman. Anyways, everybody at the state, the guy was not very happy about it. Naturally.
Sure. So you're sitting with them on live television.
Yeah.
He asks you to
share some found notes,
and you share his,
the ones that he had written,
incredibly inappropriate notes.
Yes. Yeah. He turned some the color red of your sweater today,
right,
Charity? And I only felt if I hadn't felt like he had it coming, I probably wouldn't have done something like that.
But how did that end?
Well, he played it off. What do they say in the news? Keep it going, or the show must go on. I don't know. He just played it off. I didn't really have a follow up. I just read other found notes. But the producers afterwards, the producers were like, good job. You know, they liked it. They liked it.
You seem to have a little bit of a love of vigilante justice. Actually,
yeah. Oh, yeah.
There's another
yeah.
thread that goes through the book.
Yeah, one of the other stories that we don't have to get into right now because it's too personal to talk about on the radio. But I know which one you're talking about.
All right.
Moving on.
Yeah, let's hear some found
baseball.
Notes.
Baseball. What? Oh, yeah, okay.
Share a few of your recent favorites.
Well, I have a stack of a few of my favorite found love notes of all time, because I thought we're going to talk about My Heart is an Idiot, the book today. Let's talk about that. You'll see that not only is My Heart is an Idiot, but other people's too.
You're not alone.
Yes. Okay. You're on my side. This one came from Portland, Oregon. This was found blowing down the street. And it seems like it's a guy who's counseling his friend who's in the very early stages of a relationship. He's just trying to give him some advice. So he says, don't rush things. Be her friend first. Take her out for lunch. Ask her, would you like to go out for lunch? My treat, please. Come on, please. So I like how he's like anticipating rejection for his
on
friend,
behalf of his
yeah,
friend.
Before he's even had a chance,
or it could be self-coaching.
That's true. I never thought of that take on it, but I think that makes sense. Let's see. Here's one from San Francisco. This woman told me she got to work in the morning, and she found in the office fax machine these three mysterious faxes that had come through in the middle of the night. No idea who they were from. Just, you know, these handwritten faxes, mm-hmm. but they had the time code up top. You can see when they came in. The first one's from 2:36 a.m. It says, I just want Gigi back. Tell me where she is and I'll come get her. Why are you doing this? Be a man. Whoa. Next one, a few minutes later. This is cruel and emotional abuse. No wonder you drive the women you're with crazy. They either join cults or want to kill themselves. Be a man for once in your life. The world doesn't revolve around you. Just let me have Gigi now. I can't believe you're even doing this. I will come get her. If not, I'm calling the police. All right? And then finally, the last fax at 2:56 a.m., it just says, sorry, wrong number. Apparently, and there's a smile. I don't know if it's a smiling face or frowning face. Apparently, all these really crazed, weird faxes were being sent just to the complete wrong number. Oh. So I always think that one's pretty interesting.
You know, and the fact that those are faxes brings up another question that I wanted to ask you, which is, as time has gone on, and now, as I mentioned earlier, you can collect friends by making Facebook friends and making all these connections. We can all do that. But also, we all do so much more online, and we text each other, and we send emails to each other. And
does the demise of anticipate your question?
Yeah, maybe. Do the handwritten notes, are they becoming a thing of the past?
I think that to some extent, yes. I email. I used to write notes. Now I email. I text people. But I think that as the technology evolves, the ways that you can find stuff evolves. You know, Found Magazine, it's about getting the glimpse into other people's lives, however that might be. So someone might print out an email and then lose that printout. And that's a found email. You might get an email that's meant for somebody else. I have a friend named John Williams. He gets so many emails for other John Williamses, you know, and so he sends some of those on to us. And, you know, those are found people in a way. This friend of mine in Baltimore, she got a phone for her grandpa. He's in his 80s, a cell phone. You know, and as soon as she powered it on, I think she got a used phone somewhere. As soon as she powered it on, text messages started streaming through from some girl whose ex-boyfriend had that, either the same phone number or the same phone. And so there was like 40 texts. And because at first, you know, she wasn't getting response, she just kept going. And my friend had listed out all these texts. I thought that was an interesting way to find stuff. She told me that her grandfather kind of has a subversive nature. He started writing back as though he was the guy that she was trying to write to. But I think finally let the girl know that she had the wrong number. But there's new ways to find stuff. And also I think really when you're going to write that most heartfelt note, when you really have something deep and personal to express to somebody,
to
a sandwich artist in Tucson, for example, that's when you will put pen to paper, as I did that night in Tucson.
All right. Share a couple more.
Okay, sure. This one came from Houston, Texas. My friend, you know, if you live near a school or you work at a school, you know kids are great at losing stuff, and the stuff they lose is usually pretty incredible. So my friend found this outside of a middle school in Houston, and it's in kind of a middle schooler's handwriting. It says at the top, Erica Rioja. Erica, we the boys want to know, why are you going out with Nathan? And you like all of us in a way. Tell us why and list how much you like the person with their name. For example, Fred, not at all. Sorry for asking you all these questions, but we the boys want to know and get to the bottom of this. I'm always having to write these letters because the rest of the boys, they are some punks. You don't have to tell us right away, but do tell us. Me, Fred, and Ricky thought of writing to you. Really, it was just Fred. All of the boys in the sixth grade likes you, except for some. That means you are the finest girl in the whole sixth grade. A few of them like you because of you know what, but I don't. I like you because you have a pretty face, a pretty smile. You're the only girl that has a little piece of hair going down her face. I think that makes you even prettier. You said that was your own style, and I think that's so cool or whatever. That's all for now, so I'll see you on the flip side. Peace out. P.S., call me if you want to talk about something or tell me about myself. You know my number, and if you don't, then I'll tell you in your ear. Because I don't want any other girl but you to know my number, not even Aisha.
Wow.
That's true love. So it's magical. If anybody listening has found something that, you know, a found love letter, a found to-do list, a journal entry, anything interesting at all, a photograph, I encourage them to send it to us. Send it to my folks' house in Michigan. If you go to foundmagazine.com, on the Found Magazine website, it's got the address in Michigan where you can send these finds to. Or bring them tonight to Prairie Light Books. We're having the event at 7. It's going to be really fun. My brother Peter, such a talented musician, he plays songs based on some of these found notes.
And it strikes me that as you describe Peter and as I've seen in articles written about the two of you,
sure.
Him described, he he likes to punch holes in your persona quite a lot as
well. Oh, yeah. Yeah, he can't stand me. We've been in a van together for 3 months. So, that's, you know, he drew a tape line across the back seat of the van, and like my stuff has to be on this side, his stuff's on the other. Every day, something of mine tumbles over, encroaches on his, and I get in the coach's doghouse for a couple hours. but I love him, and he's an amazing musician. He really is. I tear up listening to his songs. Some of his songs are just totally ridiculous. I laugh out loud. He's really an incredible performer and a great songwriter.
So you mentioned earlier how on this tour people are coming up to you and they give you kind of a funny look and they say, "I've read your book."
Yeah.
Because now they know all kinds of things about you.
Yeah.
It strikes me that the book in some ways is also the ultimate pickup line. If you're looking for a girl who...
I mean, I'm glad you have that take on it, because many, many people have had the complete opposite take, and they've said, "How could you publish a book like this? Who would possibly date you?" You know, when you're revealing these kinds of stories. But you know what? I think the stories are honest. I think that, you know, I think it's okay for people to put it all out there, you know, and to see the humor in their own mistakes, you know. And so I've been really, it's been so wonderful to see some of the emails I've been getting the last couple of months. I mean, the book's been out 2 months, but I've been getting these amazing emails and Facebook messages just from people, guys and girls, saying just how much the book has resonated with them. And how much they've found themselves in the same kinds of situations, and so not that they were writing notes to girls they met at Subway, but in one way or another their hearts had been an idiot too.
So, are you finding that it's a good pickup line? Are you finding that that you're getting young women who want to be the one for Davy Rothbart approaching you on the tour?
Nah.
Are you sure? You're turning red.
Color is your sweater?
Right. Approximately.
No. I mean, it's about sharing human experience. And I mean, honestly, like, I love broing down with guys or girls or anybody that comes to our events. Two nights ago in Minneapolis, we had an awesome event, and I don't really remember how the whole night went down, but I do remember at the end of the night, I was with these two guys, Ryan and Jeff, and they were two of the coolest dudes I've ever hung out with, and I'd never met them before that night, and now I feel like we're gonna be lifelong friends. They were just awesome, and we like eating at Hard Times, this little vegan cafe up in Minneapolis at 4 a.m, just talking about life, just digging into it. It was pretty special. So I'll talk to a girl all night too, but I'll talk to anybody.
The book tour schedule is pretty punishing.
Yeah, 79 cities in 99 days.
Wow.
Iowa City tonight, St. Louis tomorrow, our hometown Ann Arbor, Michigan this Friday, and on from there, Texas, North Carolina, Atlanta. It's really fun. It's a great way to see the country and see the natural beauty of the country as we travel around.
And then what's next?
I'm working on this documentary film. It's called Medora. It's about a small town in rural Indiana, and it's high school basketball team, which really has struggled over the years. And one of these towns, like a lot of towns across the country, that are fading off the map. It's going to be a special film, Medora. It'll be next year.
All right. Davy Rothbart, thank you so much.
Thanks so much. It was really fun.
Davy Rothbart is the author, most recently, of My Heart is an Idiot, a collection of essays about his romantic misadventures. He'll be reading tonight at Prairie Lights Bookstore in Iowa City. The website for the book is myheartisanidiotbook.com. Talk of Iowa is produced by Dennis Reese, Emily Woodbury, and Sarah Bowden. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. Production assistance today from Allison Sullivan. You can send us email anytime, talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Our theme music was composed and performed by the River Monks. I'm Charity Nebbe. Tomorrow on the show, wildlife biologist Jim Pease will be here. Talk of Iowa is a production of Iowa Public Radio News.